In the turbulent landscape of late medieval Europe, as the Black Death receded and the great papal schism fractured papal authority, a quiet spiritual revolution began in the Low Countries. The Brethren of the Common Life emerged in the late 14th century not as a thunderous protest against ecclesiastical corruption, but as a gentle, persistent call to return to the simplicity and devotion of early Christianity. Founded by Gerard Groot in the city of Deventer in the Netherlands, this monastic community would go on to shape European spirituality, education, and intellectual life in profound ways that would reverberate through the Renaissance and Reformation. The Brethren came from both ordained clergy and the laity to occupy a unique position in medieval religious life, a third way, if you will, that emphasized personal piety, practical Christianity, and a more democratic way of spreading the faith. The movement that they initiated became one of the most significant religious innovations of the late Middle Ages. Through their schools, manuscript production, and spiritual guidance, the Brethren helped nurture a form of Christian mysticism and practice that was accessible to ordinary believers. Their influence extended to figures like Thomas a Kempis, Nicholas of Cusa, Erasmus, and Martin Luther, forming an essential bridge between medieval religious expression and early modern spiritual developments. The story of the Brethren begins in the 14th century with Gerard Groot, whose personal transformation embodied the spiritual journey that he would later advocate. Born to a wealthy merchant family in Deventer, Groot at first pursued a conventional path to success. Educated at the University of Paris, he acquired multiple church offices that provided income so that he could live comfortably while indulging in worldly pleasures and intellectual pursuits. A spiritual crisis struck Groot around 1372. In the midst of a serious illness, a caring friend questioned if maybe Groot's lifestyle was its cause. Groot was convicted of sin and experienced a radical conversion. He resigned his church positions, donated his family home for use as a shelter for the poor, and retreated to a Carthusian monastery in Arnhem for 3 years of prayer and contemplation. Emerging from this seclusion, Groot did not join the monastic order, but instead became a deacon and itinerant preacher. With permission of the Bishop of Utrecht, he traveled throughout the region delivering powerful sermons critical of corruption among priests, advocating personal piety, and emphasized a practical Christianity. His message resonated with the growing urban populations of the Low Countries, who were seeking a more meaningful religious experience than the formulaic practices of the institutional church, which you may remember was caught up at this time in sacramentalism. Groot's preaching was cut short in 1383 when a new decree restricted preaching to only those licensed to do so and in a church building. Rather than challenge the edict, he shifted his focus to building communities that would embody his spiritual ideals. Before his death from the plague in 1384, Groot had already gathered followers, particularly among the educated clergy and students in Deventer. The most significant of these disciples was Florens Radewinge, and I'm not at all sure that I'm pronouncing that correctly, so I'm just going to use his first name. Florens was a vicar at the church in Deventer. He'd been deeply moved by Groot's preaching. Under Florens's leadership, a group of like-minded men began living together in a communal house, sharing their possessions and working together. Dedicated themselves to prayer and study at this time. They became the prototype for what would develop into the Brethren of the Common Life. Without Groot's charismatic presence, it fell to Florens to formalize and expand the community's structure. He established the first official house of the Brethren in Deventer in 1380. Additional houses were soon founded in other cities across the Netherlands and in northern Germany. The approach developed by the Brethren became known as the Devotio Moderna, or modern devotion, a term that distinguished their practical, effective spirituality from the more speculative mysticism of earlier medieval traditions. The Devotio Moderna emphasized five main points. First was personal piety. The Brethren aimed for an emotional, heartfelt relationship with Christ. Second was practical Christianity. They simply aimed to translate their spiritual insights into daily actions, moral living. We might say just living out their faith. Third were spiritual exercises, which today we might call spiritual disciplines. These were systematic practices of self-examination, meditation, and prayer. A fourth point was accessibility. The Brethren wanted their system to be something that lay people could engage, not just ordained clergy. Finally, the fifth point was an inner transformation. The Brethren's program aimed at reforming individual hearts rather than institutional structures. Unlike more radical movements like the Lollards in England or the Hussites in Bohemia, which were contemporary with the Brethren, and which we'll take a look at soon, the Brethren did not directly challenge Roman doctrine. Instead, they sought to deepen and internalize Orthodox faith while modeling a pure form of Christian community. The Brethren established a distinctive form of religious community that navigated between traditional monasticism and secular life. Members lived in houses, shared possessions, and followed a common schedule of work, prayer, study. Unlike monks, they didn't take formal religious vows, allowing them to remain technically within the category of lay people, a status that provided protection from certain ecclesiastical regulations and scrutiny. Their daily rhythm balanced manual labor, primarily book production, with spiritual exercises, devotions, we might say. Each member had specific responsibilities within the household, from cooking and cleaning to copying manuscripts and teaching. This division of labor reflected both practical necessity and spiritual values. Work was understood as a form of devotion and service to the community. The Brethren maintained a simple lifestyle, avoiding ostentation while not embracing extreme asceticism. Their houses were orderly, clean, but modestly furnished. They wore dark, plain clothing that distinguished them from both elaborate secular fashions and formal religious habits. Their communities included men from various social backgrounds, from former university students to artisans, united by their commitment to the spiritual ideals of the Devotio Moderna. The most influential aspect of the Brethren's work was their commitment to education. Many houses operated schools that provided both basic literacy and advanced instruction for boys, particularly those that showed intellectual promise but lacked financial resources. These schools became known for their high academic standards and practical discipleship. The curriculum combined traditional elements of medieval education, that is, grammar, rhetoric, logic, with an emphasis on fluency in Latin, the language, of course, of theology. Students were exposed to classical and Christian texts. What stood out was the integration of discipleship throughout the educational experience. The students were expected to mature spiritually and morally alongside their intellectual abilities. Teachers in these schools, Brethren themselves, served as mentors. They practiced what historians recognize as an early form of individualized instruction, adapting methods to students' abilities and monitoring their moral as well as their intellectual development. The Brethren schools spread throughout the Low Countries and parts of Germany, creating a network of educational institutions. Notable alumni included Nicholas of Cusa, the influential philosopher and church reformer Desiderius Erasmus. He was the humanist scholar whose work would help shape both the Renaissance and the Reformation in Northern Europe. The Brethren's most visible occupation was the copying and production of books. Before the introduction of printing to Europe, they created efficient writing workshops where manuscripts were meticulously copied, bound, and sometimes illuminated. When I say illuminated, I don't mean that they installed LEDs so that these books could be read at night like your backlit Kindle. Chances are you've seen an illuminated manuscript. It's one of those old works where the first word or letter on a page is huge and fancied up with colored ink and hand-drawn graphics. The production of these works served multiple purposes. It provided income for the communities, it created opportunities to, well, meditate on the texts, and it helped spread works aligned with the Brethren's devotional approach. They specialized in producing devotional literature, biblical texts, and works by church fathers, as well as other spiritual writers. They also composed original essays, instruction manuals, and collections of sermons. One of the most significant literary products of their movement was a book called The Imitation of Christ by Thomas a Kempis. He was one of the Brethren. This devotional manual became, well, one of the most widely read and influential Christian texts outside of the Bible. The Brethren's literary culture emphasized what we might call everyday spirituality alongside formal theology. They recognized the importance of making spiritual texts accessible to those without advanced education, producing and circulating devotional works in Dutch, German, and other local languages. Now, this commitment to vernacular religious literature paralleled similar developments across Europe and contributed to the gradual spread of spiritual knowledge among the laity. Through their work, theology was no longer the domain of the clergy alone. The Brethren maintained a delicate relationship with church authorities. They were determinedly orthodox in doctrine, supporting the church's sacramental system and hierarchical structure in principle. But their emphasis on interior spirituality, their quasi-religious community life without formal vows, and their critique of clerical corruption, well, it could place them in a dangerous position if some bishop decided that they were now meddling in church affairs. Some clergy viewed them with suspicion. An earlier lay movement known as Beggardism had gone off into heresy not long before the Brethren formed, and in the same area. Adding to the suspicion was that, in many ways, the Brethren looked and sounded a lot like the Beggards. To navigate these challenges, the Brethren cultivated relationships with sympathetic clergy and emphasized their submission to church authority. They obtained official approval for their communities from local bishops and later from the Council of Constance that met from 1414 to 1418. The relationship between the Devotio Moderna and the Protestant Reformation is debated by scholars. The Brethren themselves remained firmly within the Catholic Church, and many of their communities actively opposed Protestant reforms. But several aspects of their spirituality and their practice influenced Reformation developments. Their emphasis on personal Bible reading and meditation anticipated the Protestant focus on Scripture. Their critiques of clerical corruption were echoed in later complaints by Reformers. Their promotion of a sincere, heartfelt faith resonated with the Lutheran emphasis on personal faith and piety. Their educational system trained figures who would later become involved in the Reformation movements. Martin Luther himself attended a school in Magdeburg run by the Brethren of the Common Life for a year, exposing him to their spiritual approach during his most formative years. Maybe the most significant bridge between the Brethren and the emerging intellectual developments of the Renaissance and Reformation was Desiderius Erasmus, who studied at the Brethren school in Deventer. Though Erasmus later distanced himself from what he considered the movement's excessive piety, the imprint of the Brethren's discipleship remains clear in his work. Through Erasmus and others, elements of the Devotio Moderna's approach were integrated into Northern Renaissance humanism, creating a distinctive blend of classical learning and practical Christianity that differed from the more secular aspects of the Italian Renaissance. The 16th century brought significant challenges to the Brethren's communities. The Protestant Reformation divided Northern Europe religiously, forcing houses to position themselves within an increasingly polarized setting. Many communities in regions that became Protestant were secularized or transformed into Protestant institutions. Those in Catholic areas often merged with traditional religious orders or declined due to changing religious sensibilities and educational practices. The Council of Trent's reforms, which sought to regularize religious life within the Catholic Church, created additional pressure on semi-monastic communities like the Brethren. They were expected to either adopt formal religious rules or to disband. By the end of the 16th century, few houses of the original Brethren remained, though their educational institutions often continued under different names. The movement's decline in institutional form didn't erase its influence. Key elements of the Devotio Moderna were absorbed into both Catholic and Protestant traditions. Their educational methods influenced school systems across confessional divides.